You're listening to the Farmyard Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? And our Patreon supporters.
Episode 13, Creating Pollinator-Friendly Lawns, with host Linda Borgi and guest Leslie Inman.
Hi, Linda Borgi here from Farmyard. It's a movement, have you heard? How are you this fine day? I have to tell you, I love this podcasting. This podcasting is really out of control fun. I am learning so much from so many people. And this week has been a stellar week because I will have interviewed 6 people this week by the time Sunday rolls around. And today is only Thursday. Well, anyway, today's guest I met all through the miracles of modern technology, Facebook. I saw her posting all this stuff was coming on my newsfeed against lawns, you know, to dig them up and put in native plants for pollinators, one after another after another. So you know what I did? I sent her a Facebook message and I asked her if she would come on as a guest, and she said yes. Well, boy, last night we got on the phone with each other. Whoa, baby, we have a lot in common. I think we're sisters from another mother, actually. And she will be giving a series on the Farmyard Podcast because, you know, agriculture, farming, food, our condition, the state of the world right now is very fluid. So we want to follow success, right? So as I always do, I will start this off to introduce Leslie with her bio. And here I go. For years, Leslie Inman has been walking around the beautiful old neighborhoods of Atlanta, Georgia, just to see the lovely old homes and architecture. But she became concerned and almost haunted by all the caution signs she was seeing on the unnatural looking lawns. She wondered, what could they be putting on those lawns that would warrant a caution sign? You know, listeners, the skull and crossbones. So that question led to a 3-year odyssey of reading, researching, learning, and posting on social media. And what's the conclusion? The truth is that conventional landscaping is as unsustainable as conventional farming, and just as bad for the environment. Leslie has delved deeply into the anti-lawn movement, native plants, pollinators, birds, leaf blowers, composting, and also the Leave the Leaves movement. She posts regularly to a growing group on Facebook called Pollinator Friendly Yards, of which I am a member, where they learn and discuss how to better support wildlife in their yards. In her work life, she has been a college teacher and an artist, but now she's enjoying spreading the word that everyone's yard can really make a difference in the world. Good job. Good job, Leslie. Let me tell you, are you there, sweetie?
I am.
Oh, delicious. Isn't this great? I have to tell them because, you know, for me, everything is a comedy. So Leslie and I just did this about 10 minutes ago. And about 5 minutes into the podcast, I said to myself, did I press the record button? And I looked and I didn't. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I forgot to press the button. It's okay.
Then we had a little rehearsal.
Yeah, a little rehearsal at a bathroom break. And I got myself a nice glass of green tea. So it was all good.
Yes.
Telling you, and we're not that far from each other. I mean, Atlanta to Beaufort is what, about 6 hours?
I think so. That sounds about right.
I mean, it's not like it's not like going to New York to see my grandbabies. But so what I would love for you to do is to let the listeners know, when was that moment, you know, when you had that brain fart, when you were out there in your neighborhood and you said, whoa, baby, what the heck is going on? And what was it? And what drove you to where you are today?
Well, it really, there was an incredible aha moment, which has to do with a kind of famous person in the gardening world, which I will mention in a minute. But the rest was gradual, just because of I will forever be amazed at the internet and the information you can find. But having that access to all these years, being so irritated with those little caution signs and wondering what people are and what landscapers are putting on people's lawns. But now I could research it. And then once I read about these chemicals that they're using, I didn't just have to sit there and worry about it. I could actually make a post about it and share the article, which was just huge after years of just wondering what was going on. I slowly it all became clearer to me that just what I say these days is everything that conventional landscapers do is really an environmental nightmare. It really is. Every product that they use has probably been banned elsewhere, and they're still allowing it here in the U.S. And it's bad news, and bad news for the poor little animals trying to forage on our properties, and they think it's nature. So the truly aha moment is being a year or so into all this, and then someone said, "Do you know Doug Tallamy?" And I didn't, and I just started watching his lectures on YouTube, and they call him the rock star of the gardening world. He wrote a book called Bringing Nature Home, and the work he's done just really did change my life. And I started incorporating that into my posts. So Doug was the biggest momentous thing, is learning what he had to teach.
Awesome. Awesome. And from point, how long did it take you to learn to grasp his concepts?
Well, I was headed that way, but everything wasn't crystallized. I was just thinking, well, this is bad what the landscapers are putting this toxic fertilizer on and this 2,4-D on to get rid of the, dandelions, which are completely from root to flower. Everything about them is edible, but we're using a toxic substance to kill them. So I saw all those things that were bad. But then when Doug Tallamy, who is an entomologist, He showed us how important native plants were, and specific plants were needed. If you wanted this kind of butterfly, then you needed to plant this kind of native plant. And that's where, and so just bringing those things into the picture just made it all so clear.
So clear, right? And we have this flip side of the coin, right? We have individuals that have such intense knowledge for the betterment of all humankind, right? Because look, without the pollinators, we're dead in the water. I mean, we really are. And that's not a conspiracy theory. We still have to rely on food to eat, to live. So we really ought to, pay attention to that. But then you have such confusing things happening, right? Like Cheerios.
Right.
Sending out wildflower seeds.
Right. But then, the argument against that, right?
It's horrible. I mean, Cheerios, a friend of mine, Lisa Stoke from Food Democracy Now, she is going to come on our podcast. Food Democracy Now funded a major study in all these different foods that are very popular foods that people are eating, like Doritos and Cheerios and, processed foods that people are consuming on a regular basis. And what they did, they sent it to a USDA laboratory. So it cost buku bucks, a lot of money. And they had all of it tested for the levels of glyphosate, right? For Roundup. Now, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. I'm not a numbers kind of gal when it comes to that, but I'm going to give you my intake on it. So let's say in Cheerios, and Cheerios was the worst, had the most glyphosate in it. Let's say we're allowed 0.005, right? Well, it tested at 2,800. And what do you give that toddler when they're sitting in that high chair, that first patty food, when they get those teeth? Now this is wrong. And now you're going to send out, now you have the audacity to send out wildflower seeds and your products are killing the pollinators.
Right.
It's wrong. I mean, it's just an oxymoron. I really feel that It's all a show. It's a Broadway show.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And then, but the thing that for us who have really been focusing on, okay, we've got all these plants from China in our yards, and the nurseries are selling plants from Australia and China and Europe that, but for a lot of reasons, or for a major reason they were brought into our landscapes was because they don't have insects on them. Mm-hmm. But that's not a good thing.
No.
A healthy ecosystem has our beneficial insects. We can't live without those. An ecosystem can't function without it. So the seeds that Cheerios was sending out, mm-hmm. they had all kinds of crazy flowers from all seeds from all over the world that are just invasive and that's just not helpful. So it did seem like a marketing ploy.
Well, that's all it was, because they're killing the bees. Mm-hmm. Don't use glyphosate in your Cheerios. Mm-hmm. Let's start there.
Right.
Right. And to all the listeners, Google the closest genetically modified cornfield from wherever you are and ride there and just walk out in one of those cornfields. You will hear nothing, nothing. There's no gnats. There's no bugs. There's no life. No sound. It's very creepy. It's mm-hmm. very eerie. Mm-hmm. And now think about it. Think about it, right? Now they're going to harvest that corn, and that high fructose corn syrup is going to go in everything processed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that we become aware. And that's what we're doing, right, Leslie? We're bringing awareness. So what are some of the solutions? Okay, let's just say I have a yard. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about anything. I have a lawn. What's a solution?
It all depends on, there are little things you can do, such little things that could help so much. Just like this, I want to fit in with the neighbors. I'm not going to be able to change my neighbor's mind if I make my yard crazy. Crazy looking.
Right.
So I fit in. I have an organic lawn out front. And then, but I've made it smaller, and I go out, nobody rakes in my neighborhood. It's all very polluting loud leaf blowers, but I rake, and I just, the leaves, that's where our soil comes from. Leaves are gardening gold. They are everything.
Your trees? What trees do you have there?
I have oak.
Live oak or just regular?
Elm. Regular.
Yeah.
I can't remember this big oak. I can't remember, but
great leaves.
Some almonds, some oak. And I just gently rake that around the tree. But now my lawn is smaller. And then to keep the leaves from flying away, I just put a little bit of pine straw on top.
Yep.
And that really, that suppresses weeds too, because I would never use glyphosate in my yard.
Right, of course.
Or anything like that.
But
that suppresses anything I don't want to grow, the leaves, and then a little bit of pine straw on top all around my plants. And it took me no time at all. So I'm not polluting with a leaf blower. I'm putting the leaves back where they need to be so they can break down and become soil. And where have I seen all the birds and all the little creatures that I love watching out my window? They all go to that area where the leaves are. I call it, you know, my little wild area. But actually, in the front, it looks very tame. Fits in with the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's where the birds and all the cute little creatures go to look for acorns or worms or whatever it is they're eating.
Whatever they're foraging for,
I don't know why you have to bring a giant fossil-fueled machine that destroys the soundscape of the neighborhood when you can just gently rake underneath your tree. It is easy.
You're very kind, honey. You're very kind. See, me, I want everyone to dig up their lawn. I want it gone. I really want it gone. You know, it's such a bad habit that we brought over from the English.
It is.
We should have park.
Definitely. And what I'm touting now, is that the bee lab at the University of Minnesota mm-hmm. can show you how to have a flowering lawn. And if people would use push mowers or mm-hmm. electric mowers, then it really could be something good for the bees. But it's really all about the giant toxic lawns.
Dear God,
I mean, if you have a little what I always say is have a little clover lawn or something like that.
Right.
Or look more closely for native plants you could put in there, and all around it put native plants for the wildlife.
I tell you, even clover. You mentioned something clover, red clover. I would plant red clover everywhere. It makes the most delicious tea. The red clover blossoms.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You gotta Google it. It's so yummy. And not only is it yummy, but it's so packed with everything the body needs.
I will Google that. I'll check it out.
Definitely.
And everybody talks about dandelion tea. And I saw organic dandelion greens at my grocery store the other day.
Now you're talking
every
turkey.
I think every Girl Scout and Boy Scout in the world should know. As long as it's not sprayed with anything. If they get lost somewhere, you can eat dandelions. If you were ever desperate, you can eat any part of a dandelion.
I am desperate waiting for them to pop out of the ground because they are so good. Those greens sauteed with oil, garlic, and a little lemon, salt, and pepper. You throw in a few potatoes. Oh my God. To die for.
That sounds wonderful.
Italian red rib dandelions. Google it. It's an Italian dish. And it's so good for you. You know, it's bitters. And what I've been telling people is bitters keep the mosquitoes away from you. Like if you could either, you know, just eat bitters and dandelion is considered a bitter, or you could take the bitters, you know, the liquid form. Or you could take vitamin B1 and then you'll exude a scent that the mosquitoes don't bite you.
That's good to know.
Yeah, especially down here. Oh my God, they're like dive bombers, these mosquitoes in Beaufort. I think they all went to boot camp on Paris Island. Then they would come here and bite me through my clothes. Chase me in the house. Okay, I'm across the street from a salt marsh, but still, I mean, how much natural repellent can you rub on you every single day? The oil in your hair and your ears. And, you know, so I found this out and it works like a dream. It really does. But, you know, plants are medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be looking to our lawns for medicine. Not for what we're doing. You know, I can't remember when it was. I think it was probably close to 10 years ago. I discovered a 130-page report from an organization called Why You Should Not Spray Your Lawn with KenLawn.org. And they had to go in like the Secret Service to get all the ingredients that they were spraying. Oh my God. That's all I could say.
Yeah.
People have no idea. They put that skull and crossbones out there for a reason.
Yes, they do.
A reason. You really think that in between that time, it's okay for the elderly and the youth to go on there with their bare feet? I don't think so.
I see it over and over again, and I take pictures and I make little mini films about it. But the landscapers spread something down and they leave, and then up, and then here come the dogs and the children and barefoot kids in the park.
I saw it
the other day. The caution sign was still there, and then the little children with their bare feet. And then the birds also kills me to see the children and then the birds land to look for food and
the squirrels and the moles and the voles. And yeah, well, but you know what? We, through our efforts, we are turning this food train wreck around.
I hope so.
No, we can't hope. You know why we can't hope?
No, we are.
That's it.
Things are changing.
It's always in the future and we'll never catch the bugger. We have to know it. And for everyone that's listening, especially if you're frustrated with the situation, when you're driving around your neighborhood the next time, instead of seeing the lawnmowers and the landscapers, just picture everyone's front lawn in lettuce.
Yeah.
Lettuce Lane. It'll make you smile. Yes, it'll make you smile. Broccoli Boulevard. We can have a tsunami of zucchini. We can. We really can. We have to grow the food where we are. We have to eat the food where it's growing. You know, I go into the stupid market here and dear God have mercy. You know, if I was buying conventional food, the only onions I could purchase would be from Peru.
Right.
What is up with that? I mean, are we that dopey now? I mean, here we're trying to save energy, carbon, and this and that, and we're flying onions from Peru. Well, see, it's at the end. It's at the end of that time, that era.
I really hope so. And then, the amount of gasoline that we use for these giant lawns.
It's insane.
Like it's like 800 million gallons a year of gas, and that produces 40 billion pounds of CO2. So it's really, our yards are really adding to climate change when we have a huge, or when we have a lawn.
Period. If we flipped it, we wouldn't have a problem with carbon because there would be plants on the land.
Right.
It wouldn't be grass. But boy, we have a lot of learning to do. We have a lot of learning to do, but it's happening. What have you seen over the last, let's say, year? Have you seen more people in your area?
Not in my area. I'm still working on them, but I posted last night about all over the country. Anchorage, Alaska, maybe you told me about that one. Someone else told me about that one. They have, banned pesticides in cosmetic type pesticides that we're talking about for lawns. And, let's see, there's places in New Jersey. There's places all over California. They're way ahead of everybody. They're banning, cosmetic pesticides in Montgomery County, Maryland is, banning them. And, I love Harvard University's example. They are doing something that is so smart. They, for 10 years, they have been an organic campus completely, and they compost their leaves, which that's where your fertilizer comes from. You don't need to go to the store and buy some toxic fertilizer that truly does come from very, very toxic chemical processes. And you don't have to do that. Your leaves, just compost your leaves. And then they make compost teas at Harvard. And then they also recently just changed all their equipment to electric.
Wow.
And that's real, because these machines are so polluting. That's a really big deal that they've done that for them, their students. And I hope a lot of campuses will follow them.
I do too. I really do. And we have to look to those leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think's going to happen with, let's say this season, what is your goal this season?
Well, I'm just going to every native plant sale and native plant class that I can find in my area. And because that's what's going to bring the butterflies, and then that's what's going to feed the birds, and that's what's going to bring the wildlife to my yard. So that's what I'm doing, making the lawn smaller. Every day I try to think of new way to shrink it or something else to plant.
Uh-huh.
And we do have a vegetable garden, but what makes your vegetables grow better than to have lots of pollinators? So we have a lot more room in our yard for pollinator plants, and all native. And I checked out all the growers to make sure that none of them used neonics, which makes our work so hard that we have to search all these things out, but definitely worth it. And so we're growing our vegetables back there too.
What is the footprint of your lawn right now as compared to before? Like, how much of your lawn have you, like, out of 100%?
Oh, it's definitely 50%.
50. So you really shrunk it.
We really did. Uh-huh. And Doug Tallamy says, you know, you can still have a tiny, and I just think of like clover. I want paths. My dog needs to have somewhere. So now it's just become a path to all our beautiful plants. So it's really like the lawn in the back is just a, a pathway to get to all the vegetables and the, and it's mostly clover and other things now too. We don't want a monoculture lawn. We want a biodiverse lawn.
Well, that's it. That's what we need. That's really the way the world should be. We wouldn't have as many troubles. Do you have any suggestions for the listener if they were going to go out and start to do this? Like, would you, how much of your lawn would you recommend that they take away, let's say in the first year? And how did you go about doing that? Physically, how did you do that?
There are so many ways to do it. Mm-hmm. And we tried the smothering method where we put, during the summer, we put cardboard. We tried everything we could find, newspaper. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an opinion about all the different ways. Then you can put mulch on top and you can just grow right on top. But we just kind of killed the grass by smothering it. Mm-hmm. And then we dug it up and kind of tilled the grass right into the soil. So it was all dead anyway, and it was all organic. We had never put anything on it. And in the front, I just have the things I told you all about the leaves, that I just raked my leaves mm-hmm. over areas of grass that I wanted to get rid of. Then I put pine straw on top, and I'm just kind of killing the grass that way.
Right.
Kind of instant shrinking. Mm-hmm. And then putting plants on top of it, just digging right in, and the grass is dying. And I have zoysia. I know every grass is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But
how long did it take for the smothering process?
Over the summer. Dog barking. Yeah, maybe a month of then we pick up the cardboard and look under it, and it was dead. So then we just started digging it up.
Was it easy to dig up?
My husband did it.
Your husband did it. Your husband did it.
Yeah. It wasn't too bad.
Wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't too hard. But I do think everybody with all the different kinds of grass, there are so many websites that can show you how to do it.
Right.
And then if you want to come to Pollinator Friendly Yards, people are so good about answering questions on there. People will say, what is this plant? And they'll answer, how do I do this? And people will help. But, if they want to join their local native, or either just join or check out their, native plant, society, and go to those sales and make sure they're all pesticide free plants.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to start. The Audubon Society is good too. They know these native plants are important for the birds. Check out Doug Tallamy. All of his videos on YouTube are so good.
So good. Well, what I'd like you to do, as we had discussed earlier, is when we're done recording the episode, you just send me any links that you feel are important for the listener to have, and then I will include all of that in the show notes.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you, this has really been wonderful.
This has been really fun.
Like I had said, I want to check in with you in a couple of months, you know, and see how many front lawns are growing lettuce and broccoli.
Yes.
Because I'm going to be sending that intention. Everybody's spraying compost in a box. Spray the country biodynamically. And also anyone that you think needs their voice heard in this realm, just have them give me a call and we'll get them on the air.
Okay, that sounds good. I will. I know people who are doing good things.
That's it. We FarmYard is the connector. That's what we are. You know?
Yeah.
People say to me, do you teach for income? I say, no, I don't teach for income. I don't teach for the income. I teach for the outcome. I want the outcome. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what we are going to harvest. We are going to harvest a very delicious outcome from our, you know, collaborative efforts. You know what I mean?
I agree.
All right, honey. Well, you have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you, Leslie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next on the FarmYard podcast, For the Love of Gluten-Free Food, with host Linda Borgi and guest Carmela Decker. This podcast is community supported We thank everyone for tuning in, and a special thank you goes out to all our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe and share. You can help support us through Farm A Yard, all one word, on patreon.com.